The third Aliyah of Parshas Mishpatim continues with themes of Nezikin and is one of the major sources for some of the principles of Nezikin, of damaging someone's property. We see that there is a liability that comes from allowing one's property to inflict harm on others' property, and that there is presumably also a prohibition. The idea that there is a prohibition is indicated from some of the rabbinic commentary on this pasuk, because the notion of ishilach as bi'ira, that you send the damaging force, there is a discussion in the Gemara whether there is a responsibility when somebody else carries the damaging force, and they invoke the term of shliach lidvar avera, telling us that there is clearly an avera involved if one is indeed causing intentional damage to others' property. However, it's not clear what exactly is the source of that prohibition. Rabbeinu Yonah understands that it's connected to Lo Sigzol in his commentary on Pirkei Avos. Others, such as the Arama, the Meshech Chachma, connected to the general value of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, which we understand to create also a prohibition of treating others in a way that you wouldn't want to be treated. The Stipler considers the possibility of it being Bal Tashchis. However, he rejects that possibility, even though presumably if one is intentionally wasting valuable property, there is a concept of Bal Tashchis that's relevant to that also, but the Stipler understands that the real source of the prohibition is a Kal V'chomer from Hashavas Aveda, that if one is obligated to prevent someone's property from being damaged, certainly one can't intentionally cause the damage. And Rav Soloveitchik applied a similar logic to the prohibition of Lo Samad Al Damriacha, that we're not permitted to stand idly by when somebody's property is at risk of harm. The Chassam Sofer in a tshuva discusses the idea that the Torah wants to make sure that we won't have a dangerous environment that can cause harm to property or to people, and therefore in order to stop that from happening, there is a liability that attaches to one who allows his property to cause harm to other people's property, and the hope is that that financial risk will encourage people to be careful not to create a dangerous atmosphere. And indeed, a dangerous atmosphere is also prohibited by the din of Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol, and some understand that also to be connected to the prohibition that is relevant here. However, it's clear that there is a liability that is separate from the prohibition, simply from neglect. The language here of Vishilach does sound like the owner himself is doing something. However, it's clear that we're actually talking about a pshia, about a neglect, about a absence of responsibility, and the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis, makes it clear that a basic level of care would be sufficient in order to address that obligation. However, when it is predictable that your property will cause harm, so it is your responsibility, and as the Adayim L'Torah suggests, that this language that suggests that the owner is actually doing something is to reflect the fact that when it's so likely that his property will cause harm, failing to prevent that is considered as if you are actively doing something. And relevant to that here, we find that the pasuk tells us uvier b'steacher, that the liability is specifically when your animal goes into somebody else's property and causes harm in that context specifically, and that there is an exemption when the harm happens b'rishus harabim in the public area. And the Rush Bava Kamma quotes from the Rif that that's because such activity is orche, is the normal behavior of an animal, and we can't expect that the owner is going to be able to prevent every type of activity that is normal for the animal. So there the Rush comments that you would think that we know this specifically because of the pasuk, and he goes on to explain that this is telling us what the reason for the pasuk is, that indeed we can't expect the owners to prevent that which is totally natural for the animal. It is interesting that there's somewhat of a tension here, because in general the liability seems to come from that which is normal for an animal to do and that which is predictable, but at the same time that which is completely normal and something that we can't expect the owner to be able to prevent is also an exclusion from responsibility. So the same idea of that which is predictable to a certain degree creates the responsibility and also creates the exemption. Rav Shlomo Fisher, in his Shiurim Beis Yishai, notes that we essentially have two dinim that are coming from this pasuk. On the one hand, the idea of orchayhu, which is that which we can understand to be the normal behavior of the animal to create an exemption, but also the specific language of the pasuk referring to the Rishus HaNizak as the only area of liability, so that we can also take the two together and extrapolate to other circumstances where there is a similar structure. And he notes that this exemption of Orchayhu is applicable to all of the Avos Nezikin, and that's why, for example, we see that if a person is walking around and there's damage that happens underfoot, so he is exempt from that as well, because of the concept of Ein Derech L'Hisbonin B'Drachim, that we don't expect that when a person is walking, he's going to be looking what's under his feet, and that's a similar concept applied in that context as well. And the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam both quote that if the nizak, if the animal that is damaged, went into the mazik's field and got damaged in that context, there is no liability here, and that comes from this pasuk as well. But what's noteworthy in addition is that we find that this exemption of Rishon HaRabim applies even to dangerous animals such as a lion, and that seems to defy the logic here. So the Aruch HaShulchan notes that that's because the Torah has to apply the rule in a consistent fashion, but nonetheless, we do force people not to bring dangerous animals into the public area that would pose such a risk to the population and to other animals. Further, Rav Yaakov Yeshaya Bloy, in a Sefer Pesachei Choshen, understands that the exemption for these dangerous animals would only be if they were actually somehow domesticated, but otherwise there is no rishus to bring them into the public area, and that wouldn't be considered something that is normal that should allow for an exemption. Pasuk Hey tells us about Eish and uses the language of Kiseitze Eish, sounding as if the fire goes out on its own. The Meshech Chachm explains that this is a different usage of the concept you find in the Gemara of Tchilaso B'Pshia V'Sofa Ba'Onas, that the nature of fire is that ultimately it does its damage in a way that can't really be controlled by the one who brought it about in the first place. But there is a neglect, there is a Pshia in the fact that one initiated the fire, and therefore the liability stems from there. And there is a Machlokas in the Gemara between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan as to the nature of the liability of fire. Do we say that Eish of Mishum Mamono, that is considered to be like one's property, so there's a liability, but it's not as if you actually did it yourself? Or do we say, like Rabbi Yochanan, Eish of Mishum Chitzav, that it's considered to be like your arrow, that even though the damage happens at somewhat of a time delay, but it's an extension of the actual action of the one who shot the arrow? And based on that position, the Muki Yosef asks the question of how is it that we're able to have candles burning Friday night? We're obligated to have candles burning Friday night, but how is that not a violation of a malacha if the fire traces back to the action of the individual? It's as if you're lighting the candle right now. And he explains that there's a distinction between the laws of Shabbos, which focus on one's actual physical action, and the laws of Nezikin, which focus on liability and are using a different metric here. And the pasuk concludes with the language of Shalem Yishalem Hamavir HaBe'era, that the mazik is obligated to pay for the damage and to make a restitution. And there's a general chakira as far as nezikin are concerned, whether the obligation is actually to replace the item itself or to replace the value, which has many ramifications, such as items that have sentimental value or items that are insured and other related questions as to what exactly the nature of the compensation is. In Pasuk Ches, the language of Ki Huzeh is the source of the interpretation of Chazal, that there is a Shavua that is imposed on somebody who admits partial liability at a Moda B'Miktas. Rishon Shnofal Hirsch notes that this is one example of three cases where there is a Shavua that is imposed by Torah law, and all of them reflect situations where there is some kind of partial acknowledgement of a liability, either that one has accepted Shmira or that one is admitting some degree of debt, or that there is only one aid when you're in a situation where you need two, and all of these are circumstances where there is a partial obligation and the rest is turned over to God, and that's what the Shvuah represents. And here the language of Ad HaElohim, that we go to the judge here, it's a whole language, it's not a reference to God, but the Michilta understands from here that this teaches us that it has to go directly to the judges and there can't be sanigorin. So the Torah Tumima understands that to mean that there is a prohibition of having tonim, a controversial topic in contemporary Bate Din, of having intermediaries who will represent the case to the dayanim, and that's understood as getting in the way of the judge's ability to discern what is actually true. And he connects this to the language of the Gemara in Shavuos on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, that this is related to the prohibition of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. My grandfather, in his commentary to the Torah Tumim Meshivas Nefesh, understands differently that this is connected to what we find Rashi and others commenting on the idea of Sanigarin, that it means that a judge who is trying to buttress his opinion when it seems to be incorrect shouldn't try to support it with inconclusive proofs, and indeed should instead admit that he is incorrect. In Pasuk Gimel, we have an extremely difficult halacha, which the Chafetz Yoar writes that he spent a long time trying to understand and simply throws his hand up because it's such a difficult concept to understand logically, and that is the idea of Ba'alav Imo, that if one damages property that he is supposed to be watching, and the property belongs to somebody who is working for him, so then there is an exemption. And Tosfos in Bava Metzia and Sadi Vav Mod Aleph writes that this is a gzeiras hakasuv without a logic to it, because it's very hard to understand. Others did endeavor to explain it. The Svarno suggests that because there is such a connection, a kiruv das, between the owner of the property and the one who's supposed to be watching it, therefore the owner must have intended it to be a gift if anything happens to it, and wouldn't insist on compensation if it's not possible to get the object itself back. That's assuming that we're talking specifically here about property which is borrowed, and nonetheless we find that the halacha applies to all the other concepts of Shemira as well, so some explain that that is a little plug. The Torah is telling us one policy across the board, even though the logic doesn't apply in all of the circumstances. The Rabag has an understanding that there is a tension between being both an Eved and an Adon at the same time, the idea that the Shomer is some type of a Eved to the owner of the property. Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch connects this to the larger idea of Shmira, in which there is, in general, a greater obligation imposed on the Shomer than one normally would expect logically. But here, because he's also taking responsibility for the owner of the property and the idea that he is employing him, so it wouldn't make sense to say that the liability he has regarding the property should exceed that which he has towards the owner. All in all, it's a very difficult concept to understand and the topic of much discussion and a parak in Maseches Bava Metzia. To skip to Pasuk of Dalet, we find the crucial obligation of Chesed in the form of lending money, Im Kesef Talve Esami, and Chazal tell us that this language of Im, which sounds like it means if you should lend money, shouldn't be understood that way, but rather should be understood as a absolute obligation to lend money when one is in a position to do so. The Or HaChaim explains that the language here is used in order to convey that one should feel as if it is the money of the ani that is in one's possession, and that he should feel inclined, therefore, to provide it for him. There is a prohibition here of acting like a creditor, of lo sielo kenosha, together also with the prohibition of interest. And here, this idea of not acting like a creditor means that one is not allowed to put any pressure on the borrower in a circumstance where he may not be able to pay back. The idea that it focuses on the status rather than the behavior, not to be kenosha, makes it sound as if, even unintentionally, creating a sense of pressure is also a prohibition. There is a machlokas among the poskim as to whether indirect pressure are actually violations of the Issur Taraisa, that's how the Kesef HaKadoshim sounds, or is this prohibition midrabanan, as the Lecha Mishnah sounds, and that itself is discussion, but one way or another, there is a prohibition here. The question is whether it's triggered only when one knows specifically that the borrower is not able to pay back. That's how the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch understand, and the Menchas Chinuch raises the question of why it should be necessary to be sure that he can't pay back. Why shouldn't we apply here the concept of Safik Daraisa, that even if one is not sure that it's impossible for the borrower to pay back, there still should be a prohibition. So he suggests that that would be impossible to apply because, in general, we don't necessarily know whether somebody is in a position to pay back absolutely, and to say that it's always prohibited to impose any kind of pressure would make it impossible for a lender ever to request repayment. Others suggest that the reason it should only apply when you know for sure he's unable to pay back is because that's the nature of the Isser, specifically to harass somebody who is unable to pay back, and therefore it's limited specifically to those circumstances. The Aliyah ends with a very important concept here that's included within a din. The Torah tells us that if one has lent money to somebody else and has taken their garment as collateral, he has to give it back to them before the sun sets in order to sleep in the garment if that's what he needs. And the Pasuk has the language here of kihi chsuso levada, He simla sol oro bame yishkav. This is the garment that he needs to sleep in. And if he doesn't have it, what's he going to sleep in? V'haya ki yitzak eloi v'shamati ki chanun ani. And he will cry out to me, to God, and God says, I will have compassion on him. And the Sridi Eish has a tshuva about this, how this reflects the various considerations one has to have in his behavior, the notion we sometimes refer to as the Fnim Mishur Sadin, that essentially there are different concepts here at the same time, that on the one hand, as far as the concept of lending money, so yes, there is permission given to the lender to take collateral and to hold on to it, but at the same time, there also is a mandate of Rachmanis, and that is equally obligatory on the individual. So even though the laws of lending money would have allowed holding on to this collateral, the obligation of Rachmanis has to also be taken into consideration, and that creates its own obligation. And this is yet another example of what we find throughout this parsha, and certainly throughout this aliyah, of a very careful balance of different obligations and liabilities between one man to another that regulate both our behavior and also our midos.